Hi, this is Donald Fagen of Steely Dan.
And I'm Walter Becker with the Steely Dan Tour Radio Special on the Album Network.
Each of you were, born and raised there in New York City and went to school in upstate. And yet prior to the Royal Scam album, you lived and recorded the Steely Dan albums up to that point in L.A. How do you think the contrasting environments affected the songwriting?
The reason we were out in L.A. is that we got a job out in L.A. with ABC, what was then ABC Records, as staff songwriters, and we got the band together out there. So, and I think that the fact that we were, you know, exiled from New York to Los Angeles, I think it did provide a lot of material for a song for. The songs, and also a general sort of a psychological ambiance.
It heightened our, our delusions, our persecution delusions to a new all-time high.
It's kind of, Salvador Dali used to talk about a method he had of painting where he would, before he painted a picture, he would have to get himself into this ultra-paranoid state, which he called the paranoia critical method. And I think that's probably what we were forced into using at that time.
Right.
It's kind of, I've often wondered, if the music had that kind of edge and kind of contrast because of your East Coast sensibilities, writing it down in La La Land, it's almost like turning the contrast on the color TV up all the way, listening to Steely Dan songs.
That's funny you say that, because that's how I used to watch all the time.
Thank you. Bodhisattva, 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 look out.
How did you ensure that it would remain timeless in a fickle pop culture? You know, popularity and taste.
Yeah, how did we do that,
How
Donald?
Did you do that? Well, popularity and taste are moving targets.
Well, we insisted that they keep printing up the CDs right up to the present time. So far it's timeless. We'll have to see.
You know, I think one of the things that Donald and I tried to do when we were putting together the album, since we were, you know, judging from the way other people's albums sound over the years, I'm forced to conclude that they often have a real shortage of songs and, you know, have to make do with whatever ones they're able to come up with by the time to start the album. But Donald and I, we did have plenty of songs. We were able to write songs fairly easily. And so I think the main thing that we did was try to pick songs that really were good and had, you know, some lasting structural worthiness, you know.
It's called the no filler concept.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you
something alien, you know, to most American projects.
No, that's true. You also took your time in a time when the industry expected really a new album every 6 months to at the most a year. You did work at your own pace, did you not?
Pretty much, you know, certainly, I guess we put out an album perhaps every 2 years instead of every year, which is what the record company used to expect. But, you know, if you want no filler, you know, you have to have some time to write enough songs so that you can, you know, pick the best of those.
I'd like a response from each of you, if you could. Which albums hold up best over time for each of you, and why?
Well, I think they hold up equally well. I use them for drink coasters, and I trade them in at the local used record store, and they seem to be glad, just as glad to get, you know, one as the other.
Which one would you love to step back in time and do over, Walter?
Well, that's an easy question, Redbeard.
Yeah, right. I'd say none of the above
none,
on that one.
None, you know? None albums. Mm-hmm. I don't think I don't really see any reason to, you know, think that you could go back and do anything better or do it again and enjoy it the way you did the first time.
Yeah, well, that's. I'm glad you said that you enjoyed it the way you did the first time. That's a good point, Donald. Which albums hold up best for you over time?
Well, you know, I actually don't get that much of an occasion to hear them. I think if I was going to say generally, some of the later ones, I think more than the earlier ones, because, you know, I guess I think of the earlier ones as some sort of juvenilia of some sort. But I think the earlier ones hold up very well as juvenilia.
Wasn't he that guy that used to pitch for the
Ray Juvenilia?
Hector Juvenilia, I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Chicago, wasn't it?
Maybe Ray was his brother, the hockey player.
I hear you are singing a song of the past. I see no tears. I know that you know it may be the last for many years. You'd gamble or give anything to be in with the better half. But how?
sing when the razor boy comes and takes your fancy things away. Will you still be singing it on that cold and windy day? You know that the coming is so close at hand. You feel all right. I guess only women in cages can stand this kind of night. I guess only women in cages can play down.
Welcome back to the Steely Dan Tour radio special on the Album Network. I'm Walter Becker of Steely Dan with Redbeard.
Now, when did you realize that Steely Dan had acquired a certain mystery that really has maintained to this day? When did you realize it?
I just realized that now.
Oh, come on.
Well, you know, if you read, you know, the music media, you know, there started to be this sort of thing about, you know, this mystique. I really think it really had to do with the fact that we stopped touring and no one would ever see us, and yet we'd continue to put out records that sold well. So, you know, that was about it, really.
Also, your countenance never appeared on any Steely Dan album covers. On the fronts anyway, and
there's a good reason for that.
And and why is that, guys?
I can't remember somebody we knew or said, oh, some critic once early on when we first started playing said, you know, it's with the ugliest band they'd ever seen.
How do you think Steely Dan would fare breaking into the business in this video era?
No chance.
Not a chance in hell.
Nah,
we'd have to work in a bookstore.
We'd be bloop out of luck.
Now, you're both bright boys, so one of the few criticisms by the late 70s.
Not according to my biology teacher, Mr. Beemuller, in high school.
Did he flunk you?
Almost. A lot of tap dancing now, yeah.
Yeah. One of the few criticisms that ever, I think, stuck was... that you were maybe too clever, too lyrically coy. This was in the late 70s. But, you know, in my lengthy conversations, particularly with Walter, I've always heard really sincere humility. What devices do you employ to kind of keep each other grounded?
Sincere humility is the one I use the most.
In what way are you using the word grounded?
Electrically.
Well, there's lightning rods on the ends of our glasses.
Donald has a alligator clip, which goes from his
You know what it is? It's those three prongs. You got to have a third prong.
That's the third prong, yeah. Exactly.
Guess what my next question was? How about humor? Your collective sense.
No place for it.
No place for it. You're too serious, right?
We have a serious message to deliver, and we can't jeopardize our ability to deliver that with some silly jokes.
I really think that's one of the things that I've enjoyed most about Steely Dan music, and also about interviewing you guys, is the kind of a collective sense of, I think they called it in the booklet, urban humor.
I think we watched too many of those Steve Allen shows, you know, those early ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, Ernie Kovacs, that's very good.
The main reason that Countdown was different had to do with the fact that the band was together and playing live and playing together more. And so the way that we dealt with our tunes in terms of arranging the tunes was more influenced by the contributions of the various members of the band, and also to the type of structure that would be useful for playing live rather than so much compact hit song, hit record type of, you know, verse chorus deals. That was one reason. I think another reason is that there's a general syndrome that happens with the second albums. You know, people who write their own material, you have, you know, your whole life up until the time that you make your first album to get songs for that one, and then you have a few months to get together the songs for the next one.
Come at it now.
stars come out at
Some of those songs on the second one existed before, you know, had been written before we even did the first one, but a bunch of them were new songs. You always want to do your new songs. You know, I think that that was a factor as well. I remember that we were out on the road. We'd be touring on the weekend and then come back and work in the studio during the week. So that made things very different. And also, we had been successful with the first album, so we felt more or less empowered to stretch out in whatever direction we might occur to us. So some of the things that we did were more experimental, or you know, the way they were put together and so on. For example, Showbiz Kids was, you know, was a tape loop that we did, and was built that way, and that was something new for us. And I think, you know, we felt good about trying different things. And I remember at the time when we finished the album, the people at the record company were kind of, they didn't quite know what to do about it either, you know. They were a little confused, and I'm not sure what it was that they had been expecting, but this wasn't it. And so there was a little disappointment there that it didn't do as well, although I think it did well enough. It didn't have any hit singles on it. You know, the song that we chose to be the hit single was Showbiz Kid, to be the single was Showbiz Kids, and it had a dirty word in it, and probably wouldn't even be appropriate for this interview. So we had to edit that out. And, you know, so we were kind of, and they made us pick the single. That was kind of an odd thing. So we made not a very good choice. So it was a little bit of a disappointment in terms of the sales and so on. But I thought it was a very interesting album. And as a matter of fact, over the years, a lot of people have told me, quite a number of people have told me that was their favorite album. And I think the reason that, yeah, see, the engineer has given me the high sign in there. I think that part of the reason for that is it captured the, more of the feeling of a real band, a live band, excitement. And it was interesting structures, you know?
You know, when we talked individually in the summer of 1990, each one of you individually downplayed the cessation of touring in 74 and the lack thereof until recently. But in the box set, the Citizen Steely Dan essays in the booklet, really, you kind of self-consciously allow much to be made of the return to live performance. Is this conveniently self-serving, or have you really had a change of heart regarding making your music in front of Steely Dan fans?
Again, I think both...
Both change of heart, and you know what's really changed more than anything else is our the situation we're in. Which back when we were touring in the early 70s, it was a very the you know, quality of the performances was extremely uneven and unpredictable from night to night. The you know, we were barely making enough money to go out and actually do it with at all, you know.
Technically, the sound was, you know.
Yeah, it was a drag. You know, there were a lot of things going on that that made it not very much fun to do, and not, you couldn't really be confident that you were going to put on good shows, you know, and acquit yourself well.
We had to open for Sha Na Na.
Wow.
We did open for Sha Na Na.
Wow.
That was a weird triple bill. It was Chuck Berry, Sha Na Na, and Steely Dan.
Actually, I like that one.
Yeah, well, it was, but I mean, you have to wonder who put that one together. Whether
yeah.
there was some mistake, you know, whether they'd gotten us mistaken us for some other band,
or maybe
opening for Slade was really
Slade.
That was an honor.
So, what were your concerns initially when you decided to make the big leap almost 19, 20 years later, what were your initial concerns about taking it out?
I think one of the concerns was we didn't want to be seen as a nostalgia band, and so we got the kind of players we knew would add something to the tunes. We tried to change the arrangements a bit of some of the old tunes so we'd have some fun playing them. And of course, I think one thing was automatic in keeping it away from the nostalgia thing is that we, because we hadn't been on the road in so many years, most of the tunes we were doing had never been played live, so we were essentially approaching a new bunch of tunes that we'd never really worked with before. And I think that that was really part of it. Welcome back to the Steely Dan Tour Radio Special on the Album Network. I'm Donald Fagen of Steely Dan with Redbeard.
Walter, is it true that you told drummers Steve Gadd and Jeff Porcaro and Bernard Purdy to, and this is a quote now, just try to play like Chevy Chase? Is that true?
No.
That's a new one on us.
That's not true.
Yeah. That sounded like Chevy, I wish that sounded like Chevy Chase made up that joke.
No, yeah, that probably
actually didn't. I did. When did he play? When did he play with? When did he play with you guys?
Who, Chevy Chase?
Yeah. In college.
I think it was Halloween, probably Halloween of 1967 or 68.
No kidding.
We did one or two parties, you know, in college. With where Chevy played the drums, and he also played the piano quite well. In fact, I remember having a rehearsal once where we tried to get Chevy to, he was going to be part of the band, playing piano though.
No kidding.
Yeah, wow. But he always had something else to do, you know. He always liked, because he really wanted to be a TV star, and you know, he used to play with a band called Orpheus. Remember them?
I remember the name. I didn't know he was in the band.
He was, I think, for a while touring around with them.
I didn't know that.
He decided you know, to become a Chevy Chase.
Here's an intriguing quote from Walter. Quote, "We thought superimposing jazz harmonies on pop songs was subversive in a much more subtle way." Walter, can you expand on that? That's an interesting quote.
I'd like to know what I, in a more subtle way than what?
Yeah, what did you mean by that?
Yeah. We have to hear the... Yeah. Could it's you have the court was reporter...
It was out of context, I think.
Well, I obviously, yeah. I think, you know, in the...
Irene, read that back.
Yeah, read that back to me. I think in the... to get back to your question, Redbeard, in the 70s, you know, that...
If that really is your name.
If in fact, that is
if
your
that,
name.
If that, in fact, is my name.
Mm-hmm. In the late 60s and 70s, you know, the musical, the pop musical consciousness was very antithetical to jazz. You know, there was no, none of the kind of harmonic devices and so on, and the kind of concise, exciting solo work that you associate with jazz was sorely missing, we thought, from the pop music scene. And that was the kind of, the songs that we had been writing basically included a lot of harmonic elements from jazz and, you know, lyrically included elements from other genres, you know, and from various black humor type, you know, literary sources that we were influenced by. So it seemed that if we could sneak a few of those things into the context of those times, that would be a somewhat subversive sort of thing to do.
And of course, it at the time it wasn't. It was not only a subversion of, you know, the sort of folk and blues derived popular music, but also it also subverted jazz as well, since you know, we were using the you know, harmonic sophistication of jazz and putting this big dumb backbeat to it. You know?
I guess that's true.
Fascinating. luck be in this time.
There was a bit of a conflict in the band. Some of the band members who were interested in the band playing and touring as much as possible because they enjoyed it a lot and they felt that that's what the band should be doing, whereas Donald and myself and Denny, perhaps to a lesser extent, felt that the live shows were never quite as good as we wanted them to be. And it wasn't any fun for us. It was just a big pain, basically. So the way we resolved that dispute is that the guys who wanted to tour all the time ended up leaving the band and, going on to do other things. And at that point, we didn't have a band anymore. We didn't really have a band to tour with. And so that was a convenient excuse for Donald and myself to tell the record company that we didn't want to tour anymore because we couldn't. So at that point, and we felt that we didn't really need to tour. We thought if we made really good records, people would buy them, even if we didn't appear in their town, you know.
Go!
You know, and now that I think about it, I have to say that in some ways we were disappointed with it too, or at least to the extent that when we went in to do the third album, we did it a completely different way. Pretzelogic had a, rather than recording with the band, which we had been doing up until then with the occasional hired hand, when we went in to cut tracks with Pretzelogic, the band was primarily studio players, with the occasional addition of me or Donald to for the initial tracking. And then, Baxter and Denny and Jimmy Hodder added overdubs to those tracks. But so for most of the songs, the drummer was a guy named Jim Gordon, and Jeff Beccaro was on one or two tunes. Most of the piano playing was, or a lot of the piano playing was Michael Omardian, and Dean Parks played guitar on some things, and I still played bass on some things, but Chuck Rainey played on a couple of things as well. So it was a different approach for us, and one where we thought that we could tailor the actual band and band members to the particular songs that, you know, the needs of a particular song, and that's something that we kind of ended up doing more and more as the years went on. Well, the band at that time consisted of myself, Donald, Jeff Baxter, Denny Dias, and Jimmy Hodder, the original guys from the band. Plus, we had a second drummer, and that was Jeff Beccaro. We had a second keyboard player, and that was Mike McDonald, and he also did a bunch of singing. You know, he sang in all the harmonies, and I think he sang a chorus or two of a couple of the songs. He did Showbiz Kids, I think, and he did a chorus in Pretzelogic, the song Pretzelogic.
The man gave me the news. He said, "You must be joking, son. Where did you get those shoes? Where did you get
Hey, this is Donald. Okay, once more.
Hey, this is Donald Fagen. Dude, this.
Okay, you're right. Hey, I'll try hi. It's a little more, Hi, this is Donald Fagen of Steely Dan.
And I'm Walter Becker on Q102 Texas, the best rock and roll.
With Redbeard.
Oh, do that again. I see what that was supposed to be. Texas. I was
now, filling
Redbeard,
in.
No, you did good.
No,
but
you.
Texas. Here's my question. Do you say Texas best rock and roll, or do you say Texas's best rock and roll?
Texas.
Redbeard.
Believe,
Texas.
Yeah. Listen, you two literary college graduates.
How about the best rock and roll in
Texas? You literary college graduates.
I'm Walter Becker on Q102, the best rock and roll in Texas with Redbeard.
No, but this is his station, so I'm asking him. Do you want me to do what we just did? Was that okay?
Yeah, it was perfect. Actually,
how about,
the possessive of Texas is Texas.
The best rock and roll.
I was just
Texas,
being
Texas, the best.
Texas, comma, the best rock and roll.
Here, how about this? I'll just do my part over.
That doesn't work.
I'm Walter Becker on Q102, the best state of Texas and the best rock and roll with Redbeard.
That's a tough one, crunchy, crisp.
In summer.
Crunchy, crisp. All right, let's see.
Jeez. All right, no.
Tough one.
No.
Okay,
It's just,
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Steely Dan Tour Radio Special and Album Network. I'm Walter Becker of Steely Dan with Redbeard.
How do you pin the meter?
Technically flawed.
You sounded Scottish. Let's try it again. You sounded Scottish on that.
Okay, I'm going to try it again, okay?
All right.
Hey, this is Donald Fagen of Steely Dan. You got to jump on it.
All right.
Okay,
all
ready?
Right.
Hey, this is Donald.
And I'm Walter Becker.
Not that fast.
Okay.
Ready?
All right.
Hey, this is Donald Fagen of Steely Dan.
Sure, and then I'm Walter Becker on Q102, Texas Best Rock and Roll with Redbeard, don't
thank
you know?
Thank you.
No, thank you is from him.
You guys are...
No, we say thank you.
You are sick puppies. You guys...
Why would we say thank you? Redbeard, let me ask you.
Yes.
Are we supposed to say thank you? Down at the bottom. That was just you saying thank you, right?
Why would it be printed? He knows what he's going to say.
But this is his message to us, you see? He sent this fax to us.
Oh, thank you. That's just the thing on the fax. That's a fax thing. I see. We don't have to say thank you. Let's try this last one once more. Okay,
all right. Okay.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Donald Fagen of Steely Dan.
And I'm Walter Becker on Q102, Texas Best Rock and Roll with the Red Beard. Now, let me ask you this. Does this imply that I have a red beard? Because, you know, I don't.
He laughs like Steve Allen, even.
Smack, 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 smack.
We hear you're leaving. That's okay. I thought our little wild time had just been. I guess you kinda scared yourself, you turn and run. But if you have a change of heart, Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't wanna call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself. Only one you want. You might use it if you
that number.
Ricky, don't lose that number.
Ricky, don't lose that number.
You guys,
all right.
You guys have been on the laughing
job
gas.
Too long.
Oh man, I'm cracking up.
Just like Duncan and Brady.
Duncan and Hines.
Yeah, right.
Just remember, guys.
We should do one that way.
Or Dunkin' Donuts.
Hi, this is Duncan of Steely Dan, and I'm Brady.
This is Duncan of Steely Donuts.
you know, this tape could blow that whole mystery thing. This could yeah. ruin everything.
As far as I'm concerned, you can use, you know,
this
whatever
could...
you want of this, except perhaps the thing about the, what was it? There was something I noticed.
Oh, now he's...
Something about Jews.
The Steely Putz part, yeah.
My mom is going to like that. Yeah.
Listen, you know, this is for Texas, you see. Anti-Semitism. Now, is there a lot of, let me ask you this, Richard.
What?
Is there a lot of anti-Semitism in Texas or just the regular
No,
amount?
We just hate
She's
cows.
She's like some, you know, with my
we kill cows.
Kool-Aid, you know. She hears that.
Yeah. We see cows, we string them up by the long horns. That's all.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, then that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
You know who Ronnie Hawkins is, you know?
Sure.
Ronnie Hawkins, when I was once in a restaurant with him, and the waitress said, how do you like your steak? And he said, just saw the hooves and horns off it and wipe its ass and slide it in on my plate.
Well, what's wrong with that? That's how we all talk down here. That's good.
Yeah, but he's from Passaic, New Jersey.
Yeah.
That's what we can't figure out.
That's what you can't figure out, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys have been delightful. Thank you. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. And,
okay,
and like I said,
we'll
just totally destroy all the mystery and the mystique and the
all that. It's a bad time.
I mean, we can destroy it in less than 2 hours. 19 years of mystery and mystique.
I think we already did that last summer.
Hey, can you follow it with the turtles?
Listen, how do I get the song Dallas? Is that on a CD anywhere?
No, I don't think so. But you can get it on a bootleg CD probably from somewhere.
Yeah, just go down to Tower Records.
Yeah,
you know,
they
it's
got
down
it.
There with all every other yeah. demo we ever made.
Yeah, they got
you
it.
Know?
Wow,
you'll find it there.
Wow. That must
one
be...
of those import bootleg ones. You
there
know?
You go.
Those are the best.
Those are the best.
Yeah, the ones that Kenny sold.
What?
Well, I'm just kidding, of course.
All right.
Kenny.
Thanks, guys.
Only kidding, Kenny.
Listen, we're stuck with you for 2 days in Dallas over the Labor Day
That's
weekend.
Right.
So I'll... I know you'll probably cancel my pass, but I'm going to come back. I'm going to try to come back and meet you face to face.
No, we're getting you the special pass.
We might have to come down to the station. This Q102, is it a real radio station?
Mm-hmm. It's
well,
the one that comes
I
with
think,
is it in Dallas?
I don't know. I can't. It's mystery and mystique. I got to hold some
uh-oh.
Back.
Uh-oh.
I got to hold some
uh-oh.
Back.
Uh-oh.
I gotta, okay. You'll have to
You're
come.
Right.
You'll have to come to the station and find out.
All right. Well, maybe we will.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, we got a special seat for you, the one that plugs in.
Did you see that movie, Airheads, by any chance?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen the promos for it.
Okay. Well, it would be like that if we come down. We'll want to play Dallas.
Okay. Thanks, guys, for the time.
Right,
I really appreciate it. And we'll see you on the road.
Okay. Take
thank
so
you.
Long.
Thank Bye. You. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Steely Dan Countdown to Ecstasy 50th Anniversary is dedicated to the brilliant, superbly talented, and irreverently funny Walter Becker, who died of complications with esophageal cancer in September 2017. God bless you, Walter. We miss you dearly. In the Studio is produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Redbeard Rocks Productions. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Listen to all of your favorite rock interviews on In the Studio with Redbeard on Facebook, on Spotify, and online at inthestudio.net.